DJ Chuang here. I'm chatting with Dave Michener. And we go back 15 years or so.
Yeah, about right, yeah.
Right. Well, Bridgeway Community Church in Columbia, Maryland is now 20 years old.
20 years, yep.
So you joined the train while I was in progress.
Right.
And so you've seen it grow from 100-something to 3,500-something.
Correct.
What's it been like?
Well, great question. It's kind of like I've watched my kids grow up, you know? And so I go back and I look at the pictures and I'm like, we were never that small, you know? But we have so many memories together. And watching that progression, and you don't necessarily appreciate it at the time, but you forget some of it, but it's great, like, when you celebrate those birthdays to go back and go, oh, yeah, I remember when that happened, and this is what we learned then, and that was our trademark vacation, those kind of things. So there's an analogy there. I don't know if that helps, but watching your kids grow.
The Bible does say something about the Church of God being the family of God.
Yeah, that's true. So that works.
There's a parallel of your personal family as well as your church family.
Yeah. One of the unique things about Bridgeway that actually attracted me, because I was in a paid staff position for 14 years, just about, before I came, and that was simply that when I got there to this church that was like smaller than my youth group, you know, it was that they acted bigger than they were, and not in a prideful way, but in a, here's the level of excellence that we're looking for, and someday God is going to bring people to us. We just need to keep doing the right things and doing them well.
Wow.
And so I think that's part of one of the things God went, ding, you know, put his hand of blessing on, too.
So would you describe that as a dream or a vision that you live into it? By faith?
Well, it's definitely a walk by faith, oh my goodness, and by God's grace. Yeah. So that's biblical, too, I think, right, DJ? It's that Ephesians 2 stuff, right? And as we've received Christ Jesus our Lord, that's the way we're supposed to walk in, by grace through faith. But I think more of what it was a value. It was an unwritten value of excellence and a spoken value of our mission, building into one another as we build bridges to our community. So what we did today, we knew was going to impact tomorrow if we flesh it out right. Yeah, so
now, church sizes have such a big impact on how we lead others and how we develop leaders. What were some of the pivotal turning points in terms of how, well, your role has changed along the way as well.
Yes, it has, yeah.
But let's just talk about certain pivotal points in the church life when you've had to make some pretty big adjustments that were just really memorable, going from 100-something to 3,500.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, obviously pushing through the 300 barrier, you have to act very differently. I think one of the things when a leader is able to change his or her leadership styles along the way, because you have to lead differently.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
I did some research on this.
Oh, did you?
Very little written about the different dynamics and the different things that a leader has to do in terms of leading differently and doing things differently with these different church sizes. And so I wanted to get some first-hand experience from someone I'm sitting next to.
Well, yeah, obviously, if you've seen a if you've seen a small family, you know, maybe with one or two kids, and then all of a sudden you're out in the mall and you see like this herd, this family that's a herd, you know, the father and the mother, they're no longer taking care of all the kids. They got other kids taking care of the kids. So there's a there's a trust that needs to be built in the development of leaders to be able to hand off, to share the leadership load. I remember when our senior pastor, Dr. David Anderson, came into a meeting and he said, listen, this year we are going to be able to grow from a church of 700 to a church of 1,000 if we do a few things. And one of those things was, I need to be able to share the leadership load. So we've got to find leaders, equip, enlist them, equip them, empower them, encourage them. And so that was a big shift for us, to not just do ministry, but to lead ministry.
Yeah, so go back to 300. What was the change there?
Well, I think, back to 300, it's really,
you got to
switch from controlling to coaching at that point, I think. Where if you're at 300, you pretty much know your flock pretty good, you know. And
I think I've heard Rick Warren talk about the 300.
Yeah, that's common.
You know everybody, and then you don't anymore.
Right. And I guess I don't have the data to support this, to cite it right now, but you can only know so many people, right?
Yeah.
And so at some point, it's not about you knowing everybody. It's about making sure everybody gets known by somebody.
Beautiful. Right? Yes, yes, yes.
So you've got that transition, and then I think I remember as a staff member having to transition.
Yes.
There was a learning for me when I went from associate pastor to executive pastor, because that position was created and I slid into it. So I went from a peer to a leader among peers.
Oh, wow.
And actually in positions. So now guys that I used to sit at the table with, we used to bounce ideas, now they're reporting to me. So there was a lot of learnings there. But one of the things that shocked me is when I had my first performance evaluation, the reality hit me that I'm no longer being evaluated on what I do. I'm being evaluated on what others do under my leadership.
Whoa.
And so that was a paradigm shift for me, because yes. I'm like, hey, listen, I try to help my brother out. I try to help my sister out. But you know what? That isn't my deal. Mm-hmm. Now it is my deal.
Amazing.
Because the staff becomes responsible to me. And they're only going to be as good as I help them be, many of them.
Yeah. How about that? What was another pivotal point?
Another one was a learning that I realized in my role as the church crew is that I had to be a cultural gardener. Because as your church gets bigger, you're not going to know what's going on. You don't even need to know all those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as it shows... somebody knows that you trust. Sure. But the reality is, I didn't pay attention necessarily. Like, say there's a group over here meeting, and there's only 80 people in that group. Now, that's a big group for some churches, but in this group, in this situation, it might not be. And so I can't assume that that group is going to have the same DNA in the same field that we have for the rest of the church. Mm. So if you're not careful, a leader can take something and run with it and say, now is my chance, you know. And so you've got this church within a church. It might say the same name on the building, but it's a completely different program. People wake up and go, this isn't Kansas anymore. This isn't Bridgeway anymore. Wow. What happened? That was my fault, because I didn't guard the culture of a ministry. So there's another learning there.
And how would you do that?
That's a great question. First of all, you gotta show up. There's a ministry of presence, right?
Okay.
And so I've gotta not just take my friend's word for it, who I've been friends with on staff for years, that this is what's happening. You don't get what you expect, you get what you inspect, right? And so I needed to come on by and just at least peek in and just create enough healthy tension to see for myself before, you know.
That's part of Bridgeway culture. You got to learn how to rhyme, huh?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I've noticed that over the years.
Oh, maybe.
Sometimes cheesy.
It's very cheesy, in fact. It's double cheesy. Okay. Lemon squeezy. Yeah.
Okay. So 300, learning to be a gardener.
Yep.
What was another
catalytic events?
Big step.
Well, we were meeting in a community college, so
you
lead one way there, then you go to multiple services, so you have to lead a little differently and build teams. Did I say build teams? All right, so it becomes a team ministry.
Yes.
Then we launched a video venue, so you have to lead differently there. And then, where do people gather for information and synergy on a Sunday? Mm-hmm. Then where do you have your other ministries and facilities?
And when did the permanent facilities come in the timeline? Because you're in facilities
In facilities now. I'm thinking it was around 2006. I can go back and check the data.
That's all right.
2005.
Round numbers are okay.
Okay, cool. So what we did, and this required interesting leadership, because the theater that we were renting each week, we'd come in, it was turnkey, it wasn't turnkey. We had to bring everything unpacked.
Yeah.
And we did that for years and years.
That's right.
Then we moved to a building that we were future fitting, and we couldn't get in the building. So we had 4 weeks that we met in a tent in the church parking lot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. And then we got into the building. We could use the educational space, but our worship theater was not done yet. So
that's
we
right.
met in a lobby for 18
man, that
months.
Was crazy.
Back to multiple services, thinking you're going to enter the promised land, and
the stage was, 4 feet wide?
Yeah, it was. We had all these TV monitors, these plasmas hanging up from, and we still had the video cafe, which wasn't a cafe at all. It was people
watching. Actually, that was more comfortable than the lobby.
Yes, it probably was. And so so you lead differently there, then you move into the theater, and then we went back to, we actually went to two services again. Okay. So we went from 3 to 2. Mm. And, you know, that creates another whole thing because people are starting to see each other, more people at one time. Yeah. And so, And then when we went to 3 services, you know, that's another game changer. Now we have another site. Well, we don't have a church site. We have an educational site that's adjacent to our property, and we're getting ready to do a youth warehouse, which will put a video cafe over there. Uh-huh. So now we got experience. Now our people are like, video cafe, I remember that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Not a big deal. So anyway, so you have to be able to make those shifts in how you lead.
Yes. And now as executive pastor, you're running between 3,200 and 3,500.
Yep, yep. Every Sunday, and my shift now,
does it feel like you're in a groove?
Oh, I'm having a great time. I mean, I'm in way over my head, you know, so it keeps me God dependent. But yes. I'm having a blast. I'm comfortable in my own skin. But I think the reality for us now is making sure this is where the fun is. Two things: making sure we get the right staff doing the right things, play into their strengths. Mm-hmm. So our goal right now is to help them maximize their kingdom potential in the context of Bridgeway.
Yeah. All right.
So it's one thing to maximize their kingdom potential, but if they're never doing their job, that's a problem. So the other thing,
ease them, launch them out.
Right. You need that's right.
That's part of discerning.
That could be. That's self-selection helps.
Sure.
And then the other piece is recognizing the fact that we could never hire enough people to get to where we need to grow and all that God has for us. So we've really, you know, as I've made the shift in my hires, I'm looking at hiring, except for support staff, leaders of leaders, team builders.
Wow.
So no longer are you going to be hired just to do a job. You're basically hiring to lead a team to do ministry job. Yeah, so that's a paradigm shift. We're still in the process of making that happen. Yeah.
Fantastic. Thanks, Dave.
Oh, my privilege.
All
right, buddy.